You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, August 15th, 2016.
To do this well, you've got to have a vision that goes beyond old patterns that are sort of part of the waning industrial age.
Tech companies who help create the master plan for Bloomington Certified Tech Park are raising concerns about the design. We'll have more on the latest wrinkle in the tech park's development later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we hear from Spencer Pride. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
The City of Bloomington Utilities issued a series of sanitary sewer overflow advisories on Sunday morning after overflows were confirmed throughout the city. Included in the advisories were the 100 block of West Grimes Lane, the intersection of East Hunter Avenue and South Eastside Drive, the 1200 and 1300 blocks of South College Mall Road, the 1900 block of South Walnut Street, the 4000 block of West Broadway Avenue, and the 4000 block of West Grand Avenue. At 10:38 this morning, a second advisory was issued for the 100 block of West Grimes Lane. According to a statement from the city, the overflows were the result of nearly 2.5 inches of rain between midnight on Saturday and 9 a.m. Sunday morning. Although storm sewers and sanitary sewers are separate systems, the article states that rainfall can infiltrate the sanitary sewer system through weaknesses such as cracks in pipes, resulting in an overflow. John Callahan, public affairs specialist of the City of Bloomington Utilities, told the Herald Times that the most the utilities department can do is wait for the overflow to stop and then clean up any remaining debris. He also said that after so much rain, quote, that water is extremely diluted with an extremely minimal danger to human health, unquote. Even so, Callahan advised that people stay away from flowing water as a precaution. To report future overflows, residents can call the city's 24-hour control operator at 812-339-1444.
Last week, the Bloomington Utilities Service Board reviewed a $40.5 million budget request by the City Utilities Department. Introducing the proposed budget, Utilities Director Vic Kelson said very few changes were made from last year's budget. Finance Director Efrod Pfefferman said the department, also known as CBU, operates as three separate utilities: Waterworks, Sewer Works, and the Stormwater Utility. The proposed budget includes $1.4 million in capital improvements for Waterworks. It also outlines $4.6 million in capital improvements for Sewer Works, including $2.2 million of improvements at the Dillman Road Wastewater Treatment Plant and $1 million in improvements at the Dillman Road Plant. Nearly $700,000 in stormwater capital improvements were also included. In reviewing CPU's goals for 2017, Finance Director Efrod Pfefferman said the department will continue its efforts to maintain a high-quality water supply.
I'm going to do this by further reduction of DBP levels at Monroe Plant, with process optimization continuing to happen there. We have a water optimization team that has been formed with staff from across the department working together on that. We're going to complete repair work of a pump drive at Monroe Plant. I believe you had just approved the engineering and design component of that. We hope to complete a water system model that's under development and then utilize it to develop a flushing program of our distribution system. That's a key component of water quality. And then continue to engage community experts in sharing information and ideas.
Regarding sewer works, Pfefferman said work is ongoing to relieve sewer overflow in trouble spots, especially in the Switchyard Park. CBU is looking to expand its pretreatment program to regulate industrial and commercial discharge and is asking for an additional staff person for that program. Pfefferman also listed personnel safety and enhanced public communication as goals for 2017.
Last week, the Utilities Service Board discussed a contract with Indianapolis consultants KCI Technologies to examine whether the Weimer Lake Dam can be made viable. Weimer Lake is located within Bloomington's Wapahani Park. Utilities engineer Phil Peden told the board that the dam did not pass its 2015 inspection by the Indiana DNR and is currently classified as a significant hazard. The DNR is recommending the dam be decommissioned or reconstructed by 2017. Peden said KCI will help determine whether or not the dam can be rehabilitated.
We first wanted to make sure that it wasn't out of reach for us to go ahead and rehab the dam and keep that lake there. And so they're going to do an analysis to where we can evaluate whether we want to remove it, rehabilitate it, or replace it.
Peden said he anticipated the dam will eventually have to be removed. Board members questioned whether the city utilities actually owned the property. The board also raised concerns about the expense of remediating the lake bed should it be found to be contaminated with PCBs. Here's board member Jason Bannock.
What I'm getting at is this should this be a utility expense? And I don't know that you're the right person to answer that. It could be Vic or Chris. But I mean, that's one of the things I would want to resolve up front, because we're talking about $140,000 for really assessment and design services. This doesn't even touch, you know, what may have to be done as step two. You know, and should this be something that's the responsibility of the ratepayers, or is this a civil city problem, or is it somewhere in between?
Weimer Lake was originally created in the 1920s as a drinking source, but fell out of use in the 1940s. Finance Director Efrat Pfefferman said property deeds created at that time were all in the city's name. Board member Jim Sherman was also concerned that utilities customers might end up footing the bill for the cost of remediation of contaminants.
And I guess the point is that if the decision is made that this does fall under, you know, this body, then every expense that comes out of it becomes part of the ratepayer. So I'd be really nervous about something that could be a huge expense that... you know, we're asking for a really, you know, a significant increase that doesn't include this.
Deputy Director Jim Langley said data previously collected in the area does not lead him to believe there are high concentrations of PCBs in the vicinity of the lake. However, Langley acknowledged the expense of remediation will be high if the lake does turn up contaminants. The board also questioned why the Parks and Recreation Department was not bearing part of the costs of the contract, since the lake and dam are in a city park. The board agreed to table the contract while research was done on property ownership, as well as what role the Parks and Recreation Department would play.
An area developer is suing the town of Ellettsville for refusing their proposal to build a new apartment complex on Ellettsville's west side. Quality Realty and Development, the plaintiff in the case, is accusing the Plan Commission of arbitrarily denying their project, even though the project complied with the current text of the town code. Indiana law allows developers to petition for judicial review if they can argue the decision was arbitrary or capricious. The complaint also alleges the Ellettsville Plan Commission, during the same meeting, considered changes to the town code that would have retroactively justify their decision to deny the proposal. Specifically, the commission discussed changes that would require a second entrance to a development for all vehicle traffic, not just emergency vehicles. The original design had one entrance, and the revised design that was voted down at the most recent Plan Commission meeting had an emergency-only entrance added. No changes to the town code were finalized at the meeting. Additionally, the lawsuit says the Plan Commission took area topography into account even though the town code doesn't consider that a factor. Residents of the Litton Estates subdivision, which borders the site, have been against the project since it was first proposed early this year. Almost two dozen residents turned up at the Plan Commission meeting to argue against approving the apartments, citing everything from traffic and property values to concerns about crime. In particular, residents were uncomfortable with building an apartment building on land that is naturally higher than the surrounding neighborhood. The Plan Commission cited insufficient screening among the reasons the project was denied. The suit was filed August 5th, and both parties are currently awaiting a date to appear before a judge. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. The Bloomington Redevelopment Commission and city administrators have been in conversation the past few weeks over the design of Bloomington's Certified Tech Park. In their meeting August 1st, commission members were asked by city administrators to approve a contract with the urban design firm Anderson Bolander to design and engineer streets and sidewalks that would subdivide the Tech Park for development. The commission declined, with members saying it didn't mesh with the park's master plan. In the commission's work session last week, Mayor John Hamilton pressed for movement on the Tech Park project, telling commission members, quote, "People are ready to invest," unquote, and said delaying design and engineering work would deter that investment. Sarah Vaughn has more on the story.
There's been a bit of a pull and tug recently between the Bloomington Redevelopment Commission and the city over the commission's delay in approving a contract for design and engineering services for the Certified Tech Park. Last Thursday, a group of Bloomington tech companies launched the Digital Neighborhood Alliance as a unified effort to keep the city focused on what the Tech Park is about, a home for the local tech community. Sproutbox co-founder Mike Trotsky described the alliance.
It's a collection of tech companies here in Bloomington that have come together to work to build some new development in, hopefully, in the Certified Tech Park. So there's about 10 companies involved, and we're all currently looking for space, and most importantly, we would like to be together. We really feel like one of the core advantages that we have here in Bloomington is that we don't fight each other for talent and for government incentives.
Trotsky and Ari Vidali, founder of Envisage Technologies, say they've been in on the process to create a tech park from the beginning. They believe there could be rapid growth in the future if they could just get the tech park activated in a way that supports innovation and growth. Here's Ari Vidali speaking at last week's launch of the Digital Neighborhood Alliance.
For years, we have worked with the city of Bloomington to create a visionary master plan for an innovation neighborhood. A place where we can collaborate, where we can share and develop new ideas, grow our companies together, foster innovation, and attract the brightest minds to join us. To do this well, you've got to have a vision that goes beyond old patterns and models that are sort of part of the waning industrial age. It's a new time, it's a new world, and we need to think differently about how we create spaces for technologists. Now, many of us here, and I see some of the faces, collaborated on the master plan for Bloomington for the Trades District. We developed a joint vision for such a place. We brought it into public forum, and a lot of people collaborated and worked on that. But the city pushed reset on that project, and so we're here to try and assist our civic leaders in making good long-term choices. Together, we are going to speak with one voice regarding our long-term needs. We want to partner with the city to create something truly remarkable, something vibrant, something innovative, a place we all can call home.
The master plan for the Tech Park says it should provide a, quote, active, walkable, and bikeable environment connected to downtown, neighborhoods, parks, and the Beeline Trail, unquote. The master plan also describes a tech campus linked by a central collaborative open space. And here's where some members of the Redevelopment Commission are saying, hold on a minute. The Anderson Bolander project doesn't mesh with the master plan. It proposes an urban grid of streets subdividing the 12 acres of the tech park. You might ask why a campus feel with open collaborative spaces is so important. Vidali and his COO Michelle Cole, along with Trotsky of Sproutbox, maintain that creating collidable moments in nature is key to innovation. Vidali says innovation happens in free flow and says, quote, to think outside the box, you have to get outside the box, unquote.
So we can't really live in a grid environment. We need to be in a very innovative environment where there's a lot of green space. As Michelle was saying, we do all of our meetings walking. So streets create barriers to that kind of thing. We want to be as close to the beeline as we can be, for example. I mean, part of the reason that land is very interesting is that the beeline runs right through it. And we spend hours with our people walking the beeline solving problems. And walkability is very, very important to our needs.
Trotsky says Bloomington's tech companies provide more than 150 local jobs, and he says that number could grow rapidly. And they don't fight each other for talent. It's about creating a tech ecosystem, he says.
What you're trying to do is build an ecosystem between brand new startups and small companies and large companies. They hire from each other. People spin out of the large companies to start startups. When those startups fail, they go back to employee at the large companies. That's the small ecosystem. And when somebody says it's not possible here, the truth is an ecosystem really only takes probably 150 people. You've probably heard the adage about how a network builds. It's just about getting that first unit of ecosystem. Now, we're not going to have 1,000 units of ecosystem like they have in the Valley, but we can certainly build one unit here in Bloomington.
Trotsky says the Digital Neighborhood Alliance will be able to attract talent from the East and West Coasts with the quality of place aspects Bloomington offers. But whether it's potential employees or potential investors, Trotsky says building a visible community is key.
I really think that we have to demonstrate that this community can support that sort of employment. And the best way to do that is to actually build a community that people can see.
Brad Whistler, a co-founder of Sproutbox, says it's critical for startups to be located near developed tech companies.
It's critically important that our youngest, most fragile startups are able to co-locate with our more mature, established companies so that they've got the opportunity to learn from those who have been there before, opportunities to tap into the networks of customers and investors that have been built over decades.
So who are these companies who are informing the idea of an urban grid and even a previous decision the city made to not realign 10th Street? Katie Birch, who's a member of the Redevelopment Commission and an employee of Envisage Technologies, says the commission has not been told. City of Bloomington Economic and Sustainable Development Director Linda Williamson says she can't say.
Because they're confidential projects at this point, their own competitive reasons as well as reasons of negotiation. So until further notice, no.
Who's behind the new vision is only one of several points of concern for members of the Redevelopment Commission. Here's Commission member Sue Scambaluri.
Those kinds of questions fall into basically two categories. First category is questions about the plan itself. How does the Anderson-Bolander work relate to the original master plan done in 2013? What about these things that seem to deviate from the master plan? What about this element? What about that element? I think there will also be questions about process. One of the things that's been very important is to stay in consultation with the tech community as the tech park comes together. We want to make sure that there are, with Anderson-Bolander and the changes it might represent, we have a chance to bring in the tech sector and those who are going to be most affected by the space there.
Scambaluri says one change in plan precludes more changes.
Anytime that there is a commitment to one particular design plan, so for example, the grid that Anderson-Bolander came to us with, you are just by definition choosing some options and perhaps ruling out others.
The commission's work session at City Hall last week was one opportunity for public input. The Redevelopment Commission meets again tonight, and Commission member Katie Birch says she thinks there are still questions to be answered.
Some of the prevailing questions that I think come before or should come before a proposal like this one. For example, what do tech companies think of this? Why is it something so different from the campus feel that's being proposed? I'm not sure those have necessarily been answered, and I'm hoping that when they come to the meeting today, we can have a little more clarity on some of those.
Do you expect that there will be a revised proposal for you to look at?
We have already received the packet of information for this meeting, which includes all of the documents that we would need, and I don't believe anything looks different.
Scambaluri says she sees no harm in slowing down the process a little bit.
Truly, I think the commission is very committed to seeing the tech parks happen. I think the city administration is very committed to seeing the tech parks happen. We just know we get one chance to do this, and it's going to shape the next 40 years of what downtown looks like. So we want to be sure we get it right.
Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
The Bloomington Redevelopment Commission meeting began today at 5 p.m. in the McCloskey Conference Room in City Hall. Information about the Tech Parks Master Plan can be found at the city's website.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Judy Epp, and I'm a director, treasurer, and volunteer coordinator for Spencer Pride. Spencer Pride's core mission is to promote and celebrate the GLPT community in the rural areas. We support the community by holding events. We have our annual festival on the Courthouse Lawn in Spencer, which is a really big deal because, as far as we know, we're the only Pride organization in the country to hold a festival on the courthouse lawn. And we're pretty sure we're the only one with a drag show on the courthouse lawn. So that makes us unique in that we're out there, we're showing everyone in our community that it is okay to be out, you can be safe and be out, and that's the big thrust of the festival. And our other event is the Night at the Tivoli. It's for GLBT History Month. We do it in October. All of our events are free, which is very important to us, especially in our community. And now we're getting ready to open a community center on the square in Spencer. And we'll be having our grand opening in September during Apple Butter Festival. There are still people who are afraid to be out in the rural community. And I think now more than ever, the community center is so important because the political atmosphere lately is making it kind of scary for minorities. The GLBT community, we are not only a minority in society, we're oftentimes a minority within our own family. So it makes it a more difficult situation for that reason. And again, in the rural community, people are more afraid because a lot of people know other people. It's that small town atmosphere where everybody knows everybody and everybody knows your business. My wife and I have been together, this year will be 39 years, and we live out in the country with our dogs, and we feel like it's important for us to be an example. You can live to a ripe old age and be out and living in this rural community, and it's okay. It's a little different because there aren't other resources in the community. We're pretty much it. And a good example of this is Kathy Wyatt is the president of our local PFLAG, White River Valley PFLAG. She has tried to have meetings in Spencer before, and people won't come. Parents, it's for parents, friends, and family. They're afraid. They have told her, somebody might see me coming there. And then my child doesn't want to be out, or I'm afraid to be out. Because once the children are out, the parents have to come out as well. And oftentimes they've got a business, they're afraid they'll lose business if people find out. And after the Orlando shooting, Kathy's phone was blowing up with parents wanting help. So she again tried to have a meeting in Spencer in our community center, and one parent showed up. So parents are still fearful in the rural community of people knowing that their child is gay for whatever reason. So we're working very, very hard to dispel their fears and help them realize it's okay. We'll help you through this. Just take a step toward us and we'll be there with the handout. But so we're trying to normalize our people in the rural community is pretty much what we're trying to do. Thanks for listening. I'm Judy with Spencer Pride.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
I'm Lucy Shake with three ways to volunteer for the LGBTQIA community in Bloomington and beyond. You can get involved with Spencer Pride. They welcome everyone to join them as they continue to cultivate a community of compassion and celebration for all people. Volunteers are invited to get involved in their two annual events each year, the Spencer Pride Festival in June and a night at the Tivoli in October. Saturday, August 27th, marks the third annual Bloomington Pride Summerfest located at 4th and College Avenue in downtown Bloomington. All volunteers will receive free food and an exclusive Summerfest t-shirt. If you're an advocate for the LGBT community and passionate about music, check out the Quarryland Men's Chorus. Any man, regardless of his musical background, can join the chorus's cadre of supportive, enthusiastic performing members. The chorus also relies on a dedicated team of offstage members, both men and women, to help with behind-the-scenes tasks. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jared Dill and Taylor Haggerty, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, our partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks with help from Christine Brackenoff, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Sarah Hetrick. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Now stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.